starts like this. Obviously, tonight is Zayin Adar, and that's a major day in history of Judaism. It's a day that Haman made a grand mistake about something, about 1,000 different interpretations of what his mistake was. But he clearly knew that Moshe Rabbeinu died. His yahrzeit was today, and he did not seem to know that he was born on this day, because righteous people die and are born on the same day. He didn't seem to know it. But what we should know is, we're not going to talk about that tonight, but we should know is that the Torah brings down that the reason why we say Tzidkascha by Mincha on Davening is because three great people died on Matzah Shabbos. David HaMelech, Moshe Rabbeinu, and Yaakov Avinu. That's based on a Zohar and Parshas Truma, actually. Now, David HaMelech dying on Shabbos, I think that's an open Gemara that discusses when someone dies.
So not Shabbos, Shabbos afternoon.
Shabbos afternoon. Right. Right before Shabbos afternoon. Moshe Rabbeinu, which it says died on Shabbos, is very not clear. In fact, according to both Rishonim, Moshe Rabbeinu actually died on Friday. Because a simple reason would be, because it says in the Gemara, that Moshe Rabbeinu, the day he died, or right before he died, he wrote 13 Sefer Torah. And since we don't believe Moshe Rabbeinu would have violated Shabbos writing Sefer Torah, we have to believe in that many Rishonim say it happened on a Friday. And then, that would mean, according to those Rishonim, that Zayin Adar was a Friday like this year. It means this year's calendar works out, besides Adal Falabes, this year's calendar worked out that Moshe Rabbeinu would have been passing away more tomorrow afternoon, that's what it says, tomorrow, Friday afternoon, and buried late Shabbos afternoon. Happens to be that there's a question now on Yaakov, because if you're going to say that David was definitely Shabbos, and Moshe was probably Friday, and the Zohar says the three of them go together, David, Yaakov, Moshe, is Yaakov on Shabbos or on Friday? When we go to those parashas of Vayechi, we'll get back to that. That was just my introduction about Moshe Rabbeinu, but now we'll talk to something interesting. I have a question I'm going to ask you all. I'd be blown away if you ever saw this. If you ever saw a picture of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan, this week's parasha, the Mishkan. If you ever saw a picture of the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, they have 3D colors. It's one of my artists. If you look at the things by Lublin, by Rav Meir Shapiro, it's one of the famous pictures he has. He had like a model size of the Beis HaMikdash. It's one of those, you can Google the picture, it's a famous picture. That was one of the projects. They were very open-minded yeshiva, they had a dormitory, they had a library, a lot of interesting stuff going on there. And one of the things they did, they made a project of proportionally what a Beis HaMikdash would look like. And they have it up there. The Gemara in Erechin, we're not going to take it out now, it's a Gemara in a couple places, it says something fascinating. Kalya Arev. There was, in the English terminology we use this, a scarecrow on the top of the Beis HaMikdash. Open Gemara that says this. I don't know if any picture you're going to see dealing with the Beis HaMikdash is going to have a picture of a scarecrow. What we would picture a scarecrow looking like. Maybe they had a different version of what it looks like. Maybe they had an invisible scarecrow.
It was like those pokes that they had over Walmart.
Oh, so it's a machlokes Rishonim. The Gemara says that they did something to scare away the birds. It's an Aruch and Rishonim. One of them says they had like the, I don't know what Walmart looks like, but yes, they had like the flat.
The letters.
And with the pole sticking out to stop it. So we have a scarecrow sitting on top of the basement. Why would you have a scarecrow on top of the basement? Well, who needs a scarecrow? So the answer would be very simply because, as we know, I don't know about in Houston, but birds fly free and do what they want. They don't abide by human rules. So therefore, in order to avoid, just like in Walgreens or in any other place that has these things sticking out, in order to avoid the issue of a bird doing something that we wouldn't appreciate in the basement dish, we had a scarecrow upon the basement dish. And that's what the Gemara seems to say. Open Gemara. This is the question we're going to deal with tonight. We have a different Gemara that says like this. The Gemara says that there were some great rabbis who lived in the old days, and they all had what we call magical powers. Rabbis had magical powers. Stop time, walk through walls, all different types of interesting stuff they had. There was a Talmud named Rabbi Yonis ben Uzziel. Rabbi Yonis ben Uzziel was a great Talmud. We know where he's buried today. He's buried in Amuka. Buried in Amuka. And what was his tremendous talent he had? That when a bird would fly over him, and he was in the middle of learning Torah, the bird would disintegrate. Right away disappear. His advantage was, his power was that if a bird flew over him, the bird disappeared. So the question we're going to discuss, hopefully, a few different approaches. The last one will be a little more on the side that the Chabur has made about tonight. The first two will be more practical. Is, why do we assume that Rabbi Yonis ben Uzziel would be more impressed with the Beis HaMikdash? I would say Beis HaMikdash is more impressive. Who wins? Yonis ben Uzziel, Beis HaMikdash? I would say Beis HaMikdash. So if Yonis ben Uzziel never had a bird fly over him, because they disintegrated instantaneously, because of his power of Torah, can we not assume, should we not assume, that the Beis HaMikdash itself had that power as well, and therefore what are we worried about the bird? What did the Gemara say? Go build a scarecrow or a nail sticking out, whatever it's going to be. Why? To protect us from the birds. I don't need to protect us from the birds. I got Yonis HaMidil in the base of Middash. I don't need Yonis HaMidil specifically in the base of Middash. I have the power of Yonis HaMidil inside the base of Middash. So that's the question I was thinking about tonight. You have an answer? I don't know. I'm not trying to be...
Sometimes the kind of was corrupt. He just bought his way in.
Excellent. You're saying there's positives and negatives? You're saying that it would be that the power would be based on the one kohen gadol, as opposed to the avoid of the base mitzvah.
No,
I'm not saying it's wrong.
If the kohen gadol wasn't great, then it loses its chashivus.
Oh, even though the kabbonis are being brought, even though everything else is going according to correct, not bad. A similar answer.
Do we think that the base mitzvah that the powers of everybody, of all powers, more and better than each individual? All combined?
That would be the assumption of the question, but I don't have a problem you saying no.
I'm asking.
Yeah. The question assumes.
Like also we use, let's say, shittim in Beis HaMikdash. You know, it's why not?
Oh, very good. Wait. But let's, you're wrong, but let me tell you why it's still very good. He's saying, just in case no one heard that, we have a general rule of Ein Seim Chanal Anes. That's what you're saying. Don't rely on miracles. I think that's what you were saying. We go natural. Is that what he said?
More like go natural. Yeah.
Naturally, we don't rely on miracles. Who cares if we have some power? We're dealing with normal things. Mm-hmm. The only problem with that is, which is still a good answer, is that in general, the rule of Ein Seim Chal Anes did not apply inside the Beis Hamikdash. That's the. Now, if you go through enough Gemaras, you will find exceptions. So you can try to figure things out. And that is one approach. But in general, the rule was in the Beis Hamikdash itself, they did rely on miracles. The doors open naturally every day. There's a whole mission of stuff of
they have that Walgreens dog on.
Very good. True.
I'm sorry,
I think you said. Oh, you think they're
big ones?
Oh, so.
You probably got it from Beis HaMikdash.
What?
How can you give a carbon yarn if the birds would disintegrate?
Well, one is you're bringing it. The one is some flying over unwanted guest. One's a UFO.
Oh, it's
and one's real. But not.
One's falling down into Beis HaMikdash.
Excellent. Two for two. Well, no, that is one of the approaches by some of the later Achronim. Some of the later Achronim say what he says, that when it disintegrates, well, not exactly what he's saying, but close enough, that they're saying that, it depends on what has to get into the airspace first. So it depends on what's happening to this bird. Is by Uranus and Benazil, the greatness of Uranus and Benazil was the bird got destroyed, but it still made contact. It still flew over at one point. And the Beis Hamikdash wanted to avoid those first 12 meters, whatever you're going to put, or the first 2 seconds, or potentially it disintegrating onto the Beis Hamikdash itself. That is one of the answers given by some of the Achronim. Very good. And some answers want to say that, I think what you're both saying combined, is that they want to say, if you read the Gemara, it's not so clear, by the way, in the Gemara, that there is a difference between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. That the scarecrow was not around in the first Beis HaMikdash, because that had a certain type of superpower. But the second Beis HaMikdash, almost what he was saying with Kahanim, because that was second Beis HaMikdash, almost what you were saying about the collective, what it is, that in the second Beis HaMikdash, there was the need for a scarecrow, because they weren't as holy. So that means, had they been as holy, like in the first one, they didn't have it.
Yeah, Bionis Benaz Hill was second Beis HaMikdash.
Yes.
The Talmud of Hillel.
Right, but that's him as an individual. But overall, the second Beis HaMikdash, it didn't have the Shechina there, didn't have the Metumim, it was missing certain factors. Since it was missing certain factors, it didn't have that level. Bionis Benaz Hill would have reached that level, and therefore at that level would have been done. So one answer again is maybe for the two meters before it gets in. One answer would be second Beis HaMikdash, the client's not so good, the crowd's not so good. And Bionis Benaz Hill would be good.
And
so this is part of, right. No, but that would be a problem, potentially. Because we do say Seim Echal Anes when it comes to Beis HaMikdash. But maybe not, yes. Another similar approach, what I thought you were saying a second ago, like the Litvisher approach, before we get to the Chassidish approach, the Litvisher approach would be that in a Chanami, Torah is more important than Avodah. Litvisher approach. As much as the Beis HaMikdash, I'm getting a lot of smirks here. As much as the Beis HaMikdash was valuable, the Beis HaMikdash is the main concept. It's not exactly 100% true because Torah Mitzian, but whatever. But the main focus when people are coming to the Beis HaMikdash, as he said before, was maybe for Kabbonis, right? That's what he said a few minutes ago. That came Kabbonis, that's Avodah. That's Avodah. When it comes to Torah, Torah has more power than Avodah. So you were saying what? Maybe who says that the collective is better? They're saying similar. The concept of the Torah beats the concept of the Avodah. So you have a few different potential practical approaches. Now,
isn't there a thing? I don't know if this is where you're going to go to, but they say.
Well, the question: what type of Avodah
Hashem? There's a kasha about Yonis and Menaziel. The birds burned by him. But we don't say by Hillel that the birds burned.
Oh, so why not?
Well, so what happened by Hillel?
Right. That's my answer. That's the Chassidish approach. Now, so this is when I have a philosophical conversation. What you're asking? Yonasan ben Aziel, by the way, when it talks about him as his greatness, it diminishes who he is. It says he's the weakest of the Talmidim.
Strongest.
No.
The best.
It says
he, was the...
Oh, that's what it said? I thought it said he was the weakest and he had the birds.
No, he was the other way around. He was the greatest.
And he had the birds?
And he had the birds. Yechim Zaka just knew everything.
Let's go look at the market. Okay, I haven't looked at it in 3 years. What? Well, yes. We just have to go look at what it says there. But this is the question of this. Is there something... What you were hinting at, is there something better than not destroying birds? So on a Hasidish level, but I think it's important for everyone a practice like this. Of course there is. You know what's better than burning the birds when you're learning? Controlling the power that you have that's not burning the birds. It means burning the birds is incredible, but controlling it that it's not burning the birds is even more impressive. So the Beis Hamikdash had a higher power that the Beis Hamikdash wasn't, I don't use the words chashom out of control, but it wasn't unbridled. It wasn't just out there. It was controlled within its harnessing its power. As an example, Yitzchak Avinu is known as Gvura. The Midah of Gvura is Yitzchak Avinu. Avram says it's Gvura, right? What's Gvura? It means a crazy amount of strength. But it's a funny thing when we look at Yitzchak from a childlike standpoint, what do we see about Yitzchak? His son is a bum, brings in idolatrous women into the house who blind him according to some. The son is doing... You never see Yitzchak give a word of Musar at all. His father's taking him to get killed. He never says, oh, hold back 1 second. It seems, on a simplistic level, that there's a certain meek personality into Yitzchak. That's the opposite of saying that he has Gvura. He's saying he has Gvura. Why is he being so meek? The answer is that Yitzchak understood his power. He's like what we say when you're putting on a painting on your house, you're not going to put on a painting and use one of those things. What do you call those things? That opens the ground up, right? The drills. You're not going to use those drills. You're going to take out, it depends on the weight of the painting and the amount of plaster and your confidence you have between the plaster and your beam. You're going to correctly analyze what I can put on to what can go in, which means you don't overdo anything. Overdoing something is not a wise idea. Overdoing something is bad. You're not going to use a sledgehammer, that's the word. You're not going to use a sledgehammer to put a painting in. So although, of course, Yonasan ben Aziel's power was amazing, but it was deficient in this area that it wasn't harnessed. It wasn't harnessed at all. Now, what we have to do as a practical lesson for our lives as well, we have to realize about ourselves as well. Not just Yitzchak, of course Yitzchak Avinu. Of course Yitzchak Avinu had to harness his power. Yitzchak knew that if the moment he would start giving Musa, it would be too much. It would cause tremendous damage. So he had to control himself, which is Gvura. The Gvura wasn't only his power of using a sledgehammer. The Gvura was knowing when not to use a sledgehammer. He understood himself that the moment he's going to open his mouth, the moment he's going to start giving Musa, and how much Gvura is he going to take? He's going to get blinded by the strange women in his house. The bad women in his house, he's going to blind. It doesn't make a difference. I have to know what I'm capable of doing and what I'm not capable of doing. Because in life, in every area in life, there has to be a knowledge of what I can do, but more of how it's going to affect other people as well. If this is a women's share, which is not, we talk about sneeze. Sneeze doesn't mean to look disgusting. That's not necessarily what it means. Sneeze means to understand the beauty, which we're not talking about the women conversation, and to harness it and to keep it within the right modifications. But by us, it applies to everything we do in life. Everything we do in life, we have to recognize that we have a certain power of it, but how much are we affecting other people by it? How much are we going to let the fire go up and kill the birds? Or how much are we going to control our fire within ourselves? We have a massive amount of energy coming out of us. I have a friend of mine. He's a Kensington classic. Jack of all trades. He could build bookcases. He could slaughter animals. He could do barbecues. He gets hired. Everything I'm just telling you, he gets hired on. He literally has 20 different jobs he could do. And years ago, I went to his store one time. He still does that part-time as a butcher. In a big store, he works in the background. And he wanted to show me different things that the world has changed for the better. So, for example, he told me that nowadays, there's no such thing as a walk-in freezer that doesn't have a way to open it from the inside. Why? Because in the old days, someone got trapped in there, and they got trapped in there literally. So he showed me different things that they do nowadays that's so impressive. And he took out this drill, this saw. He said, I want to show you the power of this saw. The power of this saw. And he took up one of these, like these rocky pieces of meat out, and he put the piece of meat down on the thing. It weighed 100, I couldn't even lift it. And he put it down there, and he said, watch the beauty of this. And he turned it on, he pressed the button, and the thing went right across, no hesitation. It was amazing. This drill was spinning, went right through the whole thing. In a second, it was like not even you peeling an arm. It was unbelievable. And he was showing me. He said, you understand the power of this drill? Okay, so we're schmoozing. We're having a good time. This friend of mine has a quirky sense of humor like other friends of mine. So that we'll get to later. And he decided, this really happened to me, by the way. So we're sitting and we're schmoozing. And as he's doing it, this trick he's played on other people because it was way too good on me that this was the first time he attempted such a move. And what he did was like this. He was leaning. I was like where you are. And he was leaning there. And what he had done is somehow, I don't know if he moved his hand behind. I don't know exactly what he did. Somehow he got the drill to start moving. And the drill was coming and he was just talking. Stupidity conversation. It was all planned. And I'm watching. It's probably 2.5 seconds. That felt like 45 years of my life, right? I'm watching the drill come right at his fingers. And again, I don't even know how long the whole thing took. It's impossible to know how time slows down, right? And as it's going there, I'm like literally screaming, right? And he's pretending. And amazing, the drill, the saw hits his finger, nothing happens. I'm like, what is that? He's laughing. He thought it's the funniest thing in the world. Right? I'm making Ashiyatza out loud, and he thinks it's the funniest thing in the world, right? You have to take that out, no? Right? And he told me, look, I want to show you something gals that they did. I showed you how good it was. It's circuit breaks, is that the word? It short circuits as soon as it touched human skin. Yeah. Unbelievable. And he was doing this, then he was doing it 100 times.
A miso.
Amazing.
A miso. A side of meat.
A mitzvah.
A mitzvah, that's Gishmak. Would I know that exists?
Would I know they make it, but it doesn't reset. Once it. Once
Yeah. Right. No,
you have to send it back to the company.
No, he was doing it in front of me. I was watching him do it. Maybe he had a different type. Maybe he had an unplugged plug. He was doing it in front of me. And you know what the joke was? He told me to put my hand down. I couldn't do it. I saw him do it 10 times. I couldn't do it. I couldn't put my hand down. And he was like, come on, put your hand down right now. You'll see. I'm like, no, there's no chance I'm doing this. Zero. And he was like, coming to this step. What's the idea? How does it work? How does it short circuit? Whatever the computer works, that means reality, each one of us, every second of our lives, I mean, he has full confidence, we're giving off a certain type of energy. And that energy short circuits the thing. When you were 5 years old, you took a balloon and you rub it against your hair and then the balloon goes on the wall and stands there for an hour, right? Why? Because there's a certain electricity force that's coming out of us. But that force affects everyone around you as well. No one is actually schizophrenic. But everyone is different around different people. So when you're with someone A, you're more funny. When you're with someone B, you're meaner. With someone C, you're cheaper. You spend more money, right? And it goes with groups. When you're with these four people, you become louder. And these six people, you become more into sports. Whatever it is, there's a billion combinations. No one's a schizophrenic. What it means is that when that group gets together, or that person and two people get together, a certain part of your personality is drawn out both ways. That means you only get to know that person under that circumstance. You don't get to know them under different... You know the group as a group. You don't know the group minus one person. That's why it says if someone from the group dies, the group is supposed to start considering. Why? Because the whole group actually changed. Because if five of us have a certain schism going with each other, God forbid one person doesn't come up tonight, then the whole thing has changed. Each person is vital to the situation of how everyone's working on themselves. That means it goes both directions. The four people around you are bringing out something in you, but you're also bringing out something in them. Everyone's bringing out something in someone else. That's how the power works. What we have to work on now, what we should work on, is the idea to recognize that we have a certain power and it's affecting other people. We have to have control of that or use it for good. That means Rabbi Yonis ben Aziel affecting the birds to destructive, that wasn't the ultimate. The ultimate is the base of Migdash that harnessed the birds as well. And when we ourselves are doing things, it says by Avraham Avinu, the famous Kasha, He was taking his wife, and he gets to Mitzrayim, and he turns to his wife and said, you know, I know you're beautiful. I know you're beautiful. And all the commentators ask, it's halacha. You're not allowed to marry your wife if you don't know she's pretty. If you don't know what she looks like. Pretty in your eyes. Can't marry someone. Avraham Avinu kept the whole Torah. Depends when that started. But we're assuming that he married his wife. He at one point bought her flowers on Valentine's Day. Right? Was Valentine's Day yesterday? Right. So at one point, this is a question with 100 answers. What is the pshat that Avraham Avinu now
first realized
that his wife's pretty? One of the answers given by a Chassidish Sefer, not well known, Marpa Lefesh, he says like this. He says, because as we know, the phrase of Egypt was shtufei zima, and he said in English, immersed in znus. They were busy with iPhones. They were busy with the phones all day. So what happened was Avraham Avinu, I wouldn't say such a thing, but he says, Avraham Avinu, a superstar. I mean, Avraham Avinu, when he started coming close to Mitzrayim, that energy started working on him that now he's even thinking about how his wife looks. It's gutsy to say. It means there's an energy going out there that affects everyone else. So what we have to do as ourselves is recognize how we, it's not so easy to know that, by the way, how we are affecting other people, and we have to harness that energy, that if it's going to be negative, destructive, killing birds, killing things, we have to bring it back inside. And on the other hand, if it's positive, then we can allow it to go out there.